Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Now.
Welcome to Puffcast, your Harry Potter happy place. This is episode 64 on October 19th, 2022, and I am Melanie.
And I'm Juliana, and today we have some very special people who I just so happen to have the privilege of being in the room with. It's Eric and Meg!
Yay!
Hello!
Hi!
Hi, guys! It's so nice to have you both.
Yeah.
Thrilled to be here. Yeah. Meg's Puffcast debut.
This is my Puffcast debut.
Wow.
Yes, and, it is.
And I'm not a Hufflepuff, so I feel honored to be here.
Yeah, so we welcome everyone here.
Oh, yes.
That's a very Hufflepuff thing to do.
Yes, it is, yeah. Kind of. I'm over here in Chicago, and it just so happens that Eric and Meg live in Chicago. And I was like, ooh, shall we record an episode where we're in the same room? And they were like, yes. And I was like, thank you very much. That sounds like fun.
It's also been a while since Eric has been with us, and I had a look at it. It was episode 11 and 12.
Yeah, you were like one of our first guests.
11?
We had such a long chat that I made two episodes out of it.
Yeah.
That's on brand. Listen, just let me know if you don't want that to happen with this episode. I mean, sorry, these two episodes. But no, I remember having such a wonderful talk about Hufflepuff at that time, and so it's great to be back.
Yeah, that was so nice.
That's over 2 years ago. That's quite a while.
Was it?
Oh, it does feel like yesterday. That is a bit scary.
Yeah.
Wild.
So it's nice to have you back after over 50 episodes since.
I'm thrilled to be back. And I see it, you know, I follow you guys on social, so I see it every time a new episode is posted. And I'm like, oh, those guys.
They're so cute.
I love it. I love the in-jokes. I love everything I see on social media.
So I think what we should do first is, Meg, why don't you give us your Potter ID, like your house, your Patronus, your wand, obviously your pronouns, and your favorite food that's not pizza.
Mm-hmm. Well, my pronouns are she, her, hers. My house is, I am a Ravenclaw. My Patronus is a polar bear, which is unusual, it said, when I took the test.
I have never heard that before.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. But I've accepted it. I like all animals. I have some polar bear earrings now, so I've really stepped into the role.
Yeah.
That was Pottermore's goal from the day one, is sell more polar bear merch.
Polar
tells everyone who gets the polar bear, oh, it's very unique. You should start buying some merch.
My wand, I believe, is rowan wood, and it is a phoenix feather core.
Ah.
And my favorite food other than pizza is... creme brulee.
That's a good choice.
That's a really good one. It is.
I feel like
I have a sweet tooth.
Oh, I don't want to say anything negative about your favorite food, but I feel like creme brulee is delicious, but it's over quick. Every slice of creme brulee I've had, I've enjoyed, but
it's small.
Well, it's not really a slice. A little ramekin.
Yeah.
And it's I guess it's over quick if you shovel it into your mouth.
I do have a preference for very large spoons. we found this out living together that I prefer very, very, very large spoons.
Yeah, in the silverware drawer, we have his and her spoons.
Spoons, basically. It's true.
But creme brulee, if you really take your time, you have a little spoon and you take your time to, you know, crack the caramel
crust
on top.
Yeah.
And
then
just like little by little, really just like... savor the flavors, the sweet custard and the gritty texture.
Well, I think we should get a refresher on you too, Eric. Why don't you just remind us what your house is and maybe you can give us...
Well, I wore the shirt of the band I was going to see to the concert. It's a Hufflepuff shirt. There's a badger. So I am a Hufflepuff. Pronouns he, him. My Patronus is a stoat. It is still a stoat. I have not changed it. It's still the poor animal that Hagrid serves to the trio.
I think you should give it, instead of a pizza, why don't you tell us like a random secret talent that you have?
A secret talent?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like my secret talent is...
Oh my god, what? I never even tried to do that. I wonder if I could, but it wouldn't be as good. You could do like a whole beatbox, like kind
yeah.
of like a
yeah,
like,
I
place, like play your mouth.
Into music.
Because I'm actually a proud whistler.
Oh, okay.
I'm very, very happy about my abilities.
You have to show us
what
how
should
you
I, what should I whistle?
Oh, Hogwarts theme song?
There you go. You really got fancy with that at the end.
I tried.
Oh,
that was very impressive. I can't whistle to save my life.
I can't whistle at all. Yeah. The most I can do is I can kind of sound like a boiling tea kettle.
Yeah, that's what I got. Yeah, if that's even picking up on the microphone at all.
Kettle's on.
I have some tea.
Tea's ready.
She has a secret talent.
Yeah. Eric can whistle.
I don't think there's a trick because as evidenced by Meg's failure to whistle, I cannot teach whistling.
And now that we've given a dissertation on whistling.
Whistling, yes. Thank you for coming to our pop talk.
Okay, so this is where we're going to insert the news.
Do-do-do-do-do-do! News! Hello, friends. Welcome to the news. Unfortunately, today we're going to start off the news with something that's very sad.
Yeah.
And that Mel and I are both really upset over. And I'd say the fandom on the whole is sad about and is just feeling a sense of loss over. A great, huge, giant-sized sense of loss. And that, my friends, is the passing of our dear Robbie Coltrane, who passed away on Friday, October 14th. I don't know if he was sick or what was happening.
I think it was said that he has been sick for about 2 years already.
Yeah.
So what it exactly was, I don't know. But either way, sad news.
It's a loss for the fandom just because Robbie was such a big and emotionally present person in the Harry Potter fandom. And he is kind of the person that introduced not only Harry, but all of us to the Wizarding World for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
Has some of the most iconic lines out of anyone in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And is just this big, giant, lovable person as Hagrid and as a regular human being as well, too, from what we saw with his interactions with the other cast. And it's a loss. And we just want to say to everyone who is out there who is also grieving this that even though we didn't know him personally, it feels like a personal loss because we all knew Hagrid. And that is a personal connection. And don't feel like just because you didn't know him that your feelings are invalid in any way. Like, feel that sense of loss and just know that we're all here with you. And we're all very sad over this.
Yes. Just like you, we both had the same thought when this news came through that his short piece of his interview for the anniversary last year, where he was talking about the anniversary and how lovely it is that there are new generations all the time growing up with these stories and that he won't personally be around for another anniversary like this, but that Hagrid will always be there.
Yeah. I know that even when we were watching that, that made us cry, even when he was still
yes.
alive and with us.
Yeah, it did.
If you're looking for a good cry and a good way to kind of commemorate Robbie Coltrane, I would say go watch back the special that came out in January.
Mm-hmm.
And also, go watch the first movie. That's a great way to really relive those moments with Hagrid. So, we put our condolences out to his family and to anyone who knew him personally and just to the fandom on the whole. So, and speaking on the topic of loss, again, we kind of have another little sad moment that's not quite as sad as losing Robbie Coltrane, but Jim Kay will actually be stepping down as the illustrator for the illustrated editions of the Harry Potter books due to his depression and mental health, which to him I say, huzzah, good sir. Thank you for standing up for your mental health and for being an advocate for yourself.
Yeah.
That's definitely a good thing. And my friends too, like if you are having mental health issues or concerns, please stand up for yourself, go seek professional help, really just look at what you can and can't handle in that moment. And that seems to be what he's doing. As of right now, we haven't got announced who the next illustrator is going to be, But the person who is actually assisting Jim Kay on the latest edition of the illustrated editions, which just came out this past week, which is The Order of the Phoenix, which is gorgeous. Oh my God, it's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the person who helped him out with this name is Neil Packer. So there is a question whether Neil will take over from here for the last three books or not. Regardless, they are so beautiful. They're huge. These are chonky, chonky books.
Yeah, they get heavier.
This is definitely the biggest one. Like, it's a big boy, but it's a beautiful book. It's got beautiful illustrations both on the cover and throughout the entire thing. I can say the ones that I have looked at are amazing, and I can see the detail work and why Jim Kay would have said that's enough for me, because there's a lot of work that went into this book.
But good on him to take a break and take care of himself, because that's very important, and it was definitely not an easy decision for himself because he loved doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he's gonna feel better soon and it does him some good.
Yeah, our little positive thoughts over to Jim Kay, and also just remind you guys all that if you'd like to purchase this book, it is available for purchase now, and it was only $30 on Amazon, so that's actually not that expensive for this book. Yay for that. Also, on book-related news, the autobiography by Tom Felton, Beyond the Wand, The Magic and Mayhem of Growing Up as a Wizard, is out on October 18th. So as of this podcast coming out, you can go and purchase this book. I know I saw a lot of people who got some advanced copies, which is really awesome. And every person who I've spoken with who's read the book already said it was really great. I would expect nothing less from Tom Felton, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
If you are interested in hearing about his childhood growing up as, essentially, as Draco Malfoy, because he was there since he was like 11. You can go and pick that book up now. And if you have a review, a hot take on it, and you'd like to let us know what you thought of it, just send us an email, puffcastpod@gmail.com. We have more book news. Wow, 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 wow. Mina Lima announced that the Prisoner of Azkaban illustrated edition that they are putting out will be coming out sometime in 2023. So look forward to that. For me personally, the Mina Lima ones are my favorite. They have like pop outs. They have all these cool paper items that come in them. The illustrations are gorgeous. Look forward to that in 2023. Also, they are going on a book tour. If you are interested in seeing the lovely Mina and Lima of Mina Lima, you can see them in the Magic of Mina Lima that will be happening in New York City with MuggleNet. And there will be more details to come on that soon. So that will also be in 2023. And just quickly, a reminder that the studio tour is having their festive studio makeover again. Mel and I were just there. We mentioned that right now they have the Halloween layover, and they will be confirmed bringing back the Christmas layover. So it's the Accio Christmas Cheer festive season, the festive season. They will also, along with the layover, be having a special Christmas feast in the Great Hall, and that will be happening on December 13th, 14th, and 15th. And you can start buying tickets for this at 10 a.m. BST on September 29th. That is something I think they did last year too as well, and I remember the tickets selling out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think to remember they, at least last year, yes.
Yeah.
I think they might have done it before as well. So this is like a recurring thing that they are doing, which is really cool. I would love to go to this.
Yeah.
They must have a really great menu because they really deck out the entire hall. I have seen it last year with special guests that they had there that were invited, like YouTubers and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it looked really nice.
Yeah, it looked awesome. I definitely, if I was in the area, I would definitely go. If you do end up going, let us know. We'd love to hear what your review is of this cool event. On another note, the Broadway Cursed Child play has announced that their year 4 casting will be live, I guess. Those people will be debuting on Broadway coming in November 15th at the Lyric Theater. Then I'm actually going to go see it on November 11th. So I'm going to go see it right before they switch over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I know that Nadia, the lovely girl who plays Rose Granger Weasley, who we interviewed, who that interview will be coming out soon, friends, she is actually leaving the cast.
And you might be possibly meeting her as well.
Yes, because they just reopened the backdoor meetups, so I can actually go to the back of the stage and meet with people. I did actually already shoot her a DM, and she was like, that sounds good! So I might be meeting her and maybe a few of the other cast members who are there, tell her how much we appreciate her time on the show as well, too. So
yeah,
look forward to that, friends. And then our last bit of news that we have is in regards to the Magic Caster Wands. So between our last episode and now, we have actually had the debut of all four designs of the Magic Caster Wand.
Yes.
We have Loyal, Honorable, Defiant, and Heroic. The Loyal, Honorable, and Defiant wands that are going to be available for everyone to purchase. And then the heroic wand is a wand that's going to be exclusive to Harry Potter fan club members. But that just means that you're signed up for free on the website. You just have to have the free account. It's nothing you have to pay for. It's just, I guess, so they can regulate that and see like who's like really invested and who's not, if they want to buy that wand or not. Obviously, we know the loyal wand. It's yellow. It's loyal. We know that this is the Hufflepuff wand.
Yes.
I'm assuming that the Defiant wand is the Slytherin wand, because that kind of fits that.
Yeah, it does.
The heroic and the honorable ones are a little bit confusing, because the heroic wand is blue and the honorable wand is red. And I would think the colors would be switched, maybe?
The blue one definitely looks also to me very Ravenclaw. I don't know why they call it heroic. I would have chosen a different word to describe it, but...
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But which one of those is actually your favorite? Because everyone had like a different favorite despite their house.
Yeah. I kind of actually like the heroic one because it's got like runes almost on it.
Yeah.
It's the style. The loyal one, I don't like that weird wrappy thing at the bottom. I don't know what it is. I'm not like a fan of that handle.
I'm not a fan of the little ball on top.
Yeah, it just looks weird with the handle. And the honorable one just looks like it's a lava thing exploding. And it's kind of just eh. And then the defiant one, I would say probably is my second favorite because it looks like there's like a crystal coming out the back.
Yeah, that's why I like it too.
Yeah, but it's still, it looks kind of odd. Like there's like a whip almost around the shaft of the wand. I mean, you and I are both members of the Harry Potter fan club. We have our wands and our houses and our everything through there already. So we qualify to go and purchase the heroic wand.
Yeah.
We could go get it if we want to. Granted, from what we've been told already, these wands are going to cost upwards of $175. So save up your galleons, people.
Let's see how this is going and if people really are willing to pay that much money and if it's worth it.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking I might wait till like a couple months after these come out, so that way I can see
how others are interacting with these, if they like it, if it works, and what they really look like, because pictures of course can look much, much better than the actual product.
Yeah, I just always think back to the Serafina Pickery wand that I have from the Noble Collection that has the
metal rod.
I know other people who also have that wand from the Noble Collection, and every single one of them has the rod going into the
Of course it has to, in a way it has to be, because it has to be stable.
It looks so terrible.
But instead that they used a clear thing
that
would maybe go through. We don't have to restart that again. We still have quite a bit other stuff to go through, but I would be interested to hear what everyone else thinks about these wands. Do you think they suit the houses? Do you think they should have chosen it differently? What's your favorite?
Let us know. Okay, so then we'll get into our feedback, and Mel, I think you should start off with the first bit of feedback we have.
Yes, so a couple of episodes ago, when Juliana and me came back from our summer break, we told you all about our trip to the studio tour in London, and we told you that we ran into a lot of people that we have gotten to know, and I had been starting to talk with lots of Germans, and there happened to be this German family on the train that was going at the same time to the studio tour like we did, and we had a lovely conversation, and we called out to them that if you have started listening, let us know how you liked the tour and how you possibly like the podcast. And we did get a message back from them, which is really nice. So Katharina sent us a message. She said, "Hey, I just listened to your podcast. You talked about us, I think. I had a good feeling about you too. Sometimes you meet people and you think immediately it's so sad you won't ever meet them again. Haha, and that's where you have a podcast." She said that my son Jonah was looking for you the whole day. Sadly, we didn't see you again. I suppose that means we have to come over to Finland for the duel. And I say, yes, please. We are having this agreement and I am standing by it. We will do it. She also said, by the way, to you, Juliana, thank you for the free audio guide that we gave her. You were asking about our experience at the studio tour. We loved it. I wish I could live there. It touched me deeply how much detail the creators put to the movies. Jona and I didn't mind the spiders in the Forbidden Forest, but his aunt did take the shortcut, and I recommend that shortcut if you are afraid of gigantic spiders, just like I am. It was kind of sad, she says, when we arrived at the gift shop. Everything was very messy and the things I wanted to buy were sold out. How was your impression on that shortly, Juliana? I mean,
yeah.
When we went there in the afternoon before the tour, you had a good chunk of time to go through it. Did you have the feeling then also already that it was messy and many things were sold out? Or was that only at the end that way?
It was definitely way more sold out when we went at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that
there was definitely
course.
A lot more stuff missing. Yeah. I would say that if you're going to, I think we've learned that if you're going to go to the gift shop, probably
go there first.
Yeah. Try and get there as early as you can with your tickets and then go before you go to the studio tour because they do sell out of things. And I guess the good thing is that a lot of those things you actually can buy on the store website too. Some of them not, but some of them you can. So if there is something that does sell out, you probably can find it more than likely on the Harry Potter website, but it might not be. Like, I know I got, like, postcards that were, like, specific to the studio tour or the sweatshirt that I have, the black one that says Harry Potter London on it. You can't get that online either, so.
Yeah, you can always go to the register and ask them also if they still have these items in the backlot. They will go and check it for you. If they have it, they will bring it up for you. Because that happened to me for one little badger that I would have liked to have. They did that. So it's not impossible. It's just for the day that everything is empty and they restock it probably in the night or early morning before they open up again so that the shelves are full for the next load of people the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She ends the message with saying, "You are doing a great job with the podcast. I really like it. I have been able to hear a few episodes so far and I am a fan now." That is so nice. Isn't it amazing how a book can associate with so many people? All the best for you too. Keep doing what you're doing. Best wishes from Germany, Katharina.
Oh, that was so nice.
Yeah, that was a very nice message. So thank you so much for getting in touch with us. And we're definitely gonna keep writing and we will have that duel. And then once that happens, we will, of course, share it with you listeners as well. Look forward to that.
Yes.
So, Juliana, we still have a couple of things to catch up on with our Buttercup's questions that we had in the last three episodes. So let's go through them a little bit at least. One of them is that by the time this episode has come out, there should be now a poll on Patreon at least for you to go and vote on the top five of the Boat Truckle names so we can finally name my new baby Boat Truckle.
Okay.
So if you're a Patreon or not yet, you can go sign up.
Patreon.com/puffcast.
Yes. So go over there and vote on it. And then we will announce the new name possibly in the next episode.
And then we have some questions that were kind of backlogged from Buttercup's question of the week.
Yeah.
One of our questions was, what is your favorite childhood memory or item? Mm-hmm. We had our friend David say, Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream. I think that had to do with his grandmother, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he told about that in the episode that he was on with us. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had our friend Parth who said, my childhood is my favorite thing. I miss it so much. That carefree feeling. So Parth just kind of misses being a kid on the whole.
Yeah. You know, you can be a big kid for the rest of your life, so you don't ever have to be fully grown up if you don't want to be.
Yeah, you just gotta find someone who's gonna pay your bills and then you're solid.
Yes.
Okay, and then Katarina said, the moon hopper. I love it. Is that those things that you used to add, those little trampolines for your feet? Is that what she's talking about?
Yeah, I didn't remember what it was at all, and I had to Google it. It's this sort of round ball with the...
Oh, with the handle?
It kind of looks like Saturn. It has this board on it in the middle of the ball, and you stand with your feet on it, and you kind of hop around with that, I think.
Yes, okay, I know exactly what you're talking about now. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I never had one of those.
Me neither.
Sounds dangerous. And then Charlotte said, I got told I was a big sister and along came my little brother. I was the best babysitter and I got jealous of relatives touching him. Tee hee hee. So I think Charlotte just is remembering being an older sister here. So
yeah.
And that jealousy that comes with having a new baby brother that's shiny and new and a baby.
Well, she was saying jealous of the relatives even touching him. So that she was protective over him. That's how I understand it. But I get that. I was similar like that when my brother was born. I did everything for him. I put him to bed. I was singing for him to make him sleep and that kind of stuff. So it was really nice.
Oh, see, I was just running around the house being like, look at me, look at me, look at me. Because I had to do that three other times. Because I was the oldest. access to four kids.
Yeah.
I got the attention diverted from me four times. Three times, sorry. Four if you include the dog.
Okay. So thank you guys for that. And then still to wrap this up with the Buttercup's questions, we have from last episode, our What If episode, where we asked, Aunt March didn't show up for dinner, so what would happen? And we got one message from Anna saying, she just finished listening to the episode, don't have the books on me, so correct me if I'm wrong, but during the Seven Potters chapter, wasn't it Stan that Harry used Expelliarmus on that then revealed him to the Death Eaters? So if he hadn't run away in Prisoner of Azkaban and hadn't met Stan, he probably would have used Stupefy or something else when encountering him in Harry Potter 7.
Yeah, well, that was kind of one of the things we talked about, too, is that we would have no context for Stan or the Night Boss or anything if they showed up later in the books.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we definitely would miss out on. So I think that's a good point. I forgot that that scene happens.
Yeah, that reaches even further in deeper into the story towards the end. So that is a good thought. We have one more. Do you want to?
Sure. And this is from our friend over at Belated Binge. They said, I love these what ifs, but ultimately we would need a new way for Harry to not get his permission slip and go on the run. So I imagine a similar scene would play out, but with Dudley instead of Marge. Maybe Dudley goes too far with the bullying and Harry can't control his reaction. Yeah, maybe that's what happens. That's a pretty valid point that Harry might just blow up anyway. And maybe instead of blowing up Marge, he ends up floating Dudley out of the house instead and blowing him up like the blueberry from Willy Wonka.
Yeah, when you think about how much he's being bullied anyway all the time at home already without even Marge showing up, and then Dudley and his friends are constantly going on his nerves as well.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, it doesn't matter anymore who is actually bullying him. He would have exploded for sure in some way on someone. So it could have easily been Dudley.
Yeah. So that was our answers for our episode 63's Buttercup's question. And then we have one last bit of news, and that is who our Patreon donation went to this month. So as you all know, our good friend David has joined us in donating 25% of his Etsy shop sales to our Patreon donation each month, which means that we are able to like quadruple and like amplify our donation to charity each month. And if you too are a listener and you're not part of our Patreon already, you can join us over on patreon.com/puffcast. At every single level that you join, part of your donation to us goes to a charity donation every month. And we like to let our patrons also help us decide who the charity is we're donating to. And because this is the second month that David is officially joining in with us for our Patreon donation, I did reach out to him and he chose the organization Earth Justice.
Yay!
Yeah! Their tagline is something along the lines as a lawyer for the environment.
Nice.
Yeah, they're good at pushing policies that better enhance and protect the environment, and they're a premier nonprofit public interest environmental law organization. They wield the power of law and the strength of partnership to protect people's health, to preserve magnificent places and wildlife, to advance clean energy, and to combat climate change. Behind nearly every major environmental win, you'll find Earth Justice. Their legal work has saved irreplaceable wildlands, cleaned up the air we breathe, and fueled the rise of 100% clean energy. It has protected countless species on the brink of extinction and secured long overdue historic limits on our nation's worst polluting industries. When they go to court, they get results, and they're able to do this with the generous support of people like us, which is really exciting. So they are people who are pushing policies to help better the environment, and it's something that's very much so needed and something that is very near and dear to our hearts as people who just like love wildlife and the planet itself, and very also near and dear to David's heart too.
Yeah.
We know he is a nature-loving guy, and even when he's making his wands over at Crooked Wands, he only uses ethically sourced wood. We were able to donate over $100 this month. Oh my goodness, thank you, David, to this lovely organization. And again, if you would like to join in and be a patron of Puffcast and help us donate to charity each month, you can join us over at patreon.com/puffcast. And thank you to all of our lovely patrons already. We love you very much, and we really appreciate all of your love and support.
You can find all the information to the organization and to David, of course, in the info of this episode show notes.
Yeah, so go and support David too as well. We love him a lot.
Yes.
Okay, and that brings us to the end of our news. So we're going to head right back over to Chicago and get some deep dish with Eric and Meg and see what's going on over there.
Let's go.
Hi, my name is Eric Manweiler of Woodthrush Wands. I make hand-carved wands inspired by the beauty and wonder of the natural world and our beloved Harry Potter universe. I love imagining how all of the life force and energies and magic of plants and animals enhance and shape the magic that goes into wands and cores. And if you're in the forest, how that might change the magic that you do and enhance it and strengthen it. I also really love the creative process of wands and the storytelling of it. You know, when you weather a wand and you give it sort of this used feeling, it tells a story about where that wand's been and how it's been used. You can find my wands on Instagram at WoodThrushWands.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the dark side of loyalty. We're also going to do a quick catch-up and see what you've been up to, because, Eric, it's been quite a while since you've been here, as we already established.
We're still in COVID, so that's kind of, you know, still isolating, yeah. Still just kind of seeing. Yeah. Meg and I both do, you know, sort of a big exception to the usual lockdown. We have been going and seeing music concerts, and I pretty much owe my entire current taste of music to Meg for introducing me to a lot of female indie artists that I really love. I guess I would call them indie. Would you call them indie?
Yeah, indie rock, indie pop, some folk in there, some Americana.
It's some really good stuff.
Ladies with guitars, basically.
Ladies with guitars. And I'm very obsessed, actually, honestly, with the whole, there's the whole vibe. My music taste has stayed the same pretty much since I was a teenager, and it's a lot of the stuff my dad used to listen to. It's a lot of, like, classic 70s rock. And 80s. Well, like, not even classic rock as in, like, Aerosmith or Van Halen or anything. Nothing hard, but a lot of, like, story songs of the 1970s.
James Taylor.
Yeah, a lot of James Taylor kind of vibe. So it's been really nice getting into modern music, or music that has been out within the last 10, 15 years. That's mostly what I'm up to. I feel like I've been on a music journey the last couple of years since we last spoke, so that's kind of what I'll choose to highlight.
You've started a podcast since then. And
oh my god, I guess it would have just, that was like the first month of the podcast was when
it was before Thank You for Spieling even started.
That's a perspective kind of a thing. Yeah, well, it was June 28th was the first episode released, but I didn't necessarily have any other episodes coming until like July and August. So I had an entire first season of my Thank You for Spieling podcast with a certain special guest that you might notice.
It might have ended with a bang with someone.
Oh, and you know, I was thrilled to have you come back for my 1 year anniversary.
My favorite part was that you're like, Juliana, you brought the perfect level of chaos that I was looking for. And I was like, yes.
It is the most chaotic episode is the 1 year retrospective. But yeah, for an entire year, I had a personal podcast called Thank You for Spieling. The greatest thing about my personal podcast is that I just got to talk with friends about things that they enjoy. And it was just one of those really wonderful things. And I'm currently working on what I'm calling season two. After a year off. So there was the year where I did a podcast, then there was a year when I didn't do a podcast, and now I'm back. We had a lot of interesting topics. So I would just say to anybody going back to my podcast, find a topic that you think you might want to hear about and just click play. Please and thank you.
Yeah. As I probably said last time already, that's what I like about the podcast, because we finally get to hear from you about other topics than just Harry Potter, which is really interesting. We get to know you a little bit better and different sides of your interests. I think there's something for everyone to be found in your podcast.
Thank you, Mel, for saying that. It's been a good opportunity to talk about other things than Harry. And also, like, because I'm choosing the topics myself, a lot of, like, five or six of them are about video games.
The ones
Juliana just completely skipped over.
Like Death of Something, or Death of Us All, or whatever the game is called.
Last of Us. Death of Us All is also... Death of Us All is a great alternate title for The Last of Us, which is what it is. But yeah, things about... I had my mom on for an episode, because every podcaster, really, I feel like it's a rite of passage to have your mother on your show. She was all booked up. She keeps saying no. Like, we had to really work to get my mom on the podcast. But I ended up talking about her career as a speech and language pathologist, which is totally wonderful. So it was a wonderful, just assorted variety of fun episodes to record. And I'm looking forward to picking up the pace, returning to that readiness of diversity of topic.
Yeah, okay. So we caught up with you, Eric.
Yeah.
And then you picked our topic for this week.
Following off of sort of, it's great to talk about non-Harry Potter topics.
Let's go back into Harry Potter.
I can nevertheless talk infinitely, it seems, about 570 MuggleCasts, 580 MuggleCasts.
Oh, you guys are like deep in the
hole. Yeah. Hundreds of Alohomora episodes. So Harry Potter, I haven't tired of speaking about it yet, and it's wonderful to come back. So the topic I have proposed, as we hinted at earlier, the dark side of loyalty. So this was just was a sheer, I'm so glad you guys liked this topic, because it was really just first thing that popped in my head. I know we spoke about this the last time I was on in terms of Hufflepuff gets a bad rap because of this dark side. So they're known for being very loyal. When you are a Hufflepuff, that feels great. It's a warm, cozy blanket.
Mm-hmm.
But is there sort of a downside to being loyal? And does loyalty itself have its limits? So that was kind of my interest.
Even though we're kind of the puffy, like, cutesy house almost, how we can also have, like, a dark side to us, too. What we would more or less call, like, a burnt Hufflepuff, I would say.
Ooh, hell hath no fury, like a Hufflepuff scorned.
Yeah, well, I brought up Cedric Diggory from The Cursed Child, because he's kind of, like, the best example we have of that.
Oh, I hate that. Literally a Death Eater.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, granted, like, we all know that that actual script is a flaming pile of poop. It's very bad. We hate the script. The play we love. The actors and the plays and the staging, lovely. Time Turner effect, watch it all day long.
I still don't know how they did that.
I genuinely have no idea.
Special effects.
It feels like we were actually traveling through time.
Yeah, and then we landed here. Who knew? Wow. Time travel. But yeah, that's kind of the best example I would say we have, like, of a Hufflepuff that just gets burnt by everything that's going on around him.
Well, yeah, like, you take any trait that is the Hogwarts house trait has an extreme.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it does go to the point where you can be too loyal. You can take things to an extent where you're just loyally blind, I guess.
Blind loyalty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just take things to a point where you just will not give in no matter what. You're like, I am stuck with this cause.
But you know, I'm thinking of in Chamber of Secrets when Ernie McMillan and Hannah Abbott and all of them just turn against Harry. For possibly being the heir of Slytherin, because their loyalty to Justin just kind of, it gives them tunnel vision. That's all they can see.
Yeah. They're not considering all sides in that moment. But I guess I would argue, because of their age, but also because of, like, the circumstances of the book, that that's more a protective side of Hufflepuffs than strictly loyal. If Ernie or if Justin Finch-Fletchley, for instance, was, like, calling Harry racist names, they were just like, no, he's our boy and we need to protect him against all costs against Harry, then that would be more the loyalty aspect going bang. But I think also, like, that's more of the protection side going wrong, too.
I think, like, protection comes into loyalty, though, because if you're really loyal to something, you're willing to protect it pretty much to all means.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a multifaceted
Like, you never thing. Do anything against them, and also you'll keep them safe.
Yeah, you're going to keep them in a nice little box. No one touch them. No touchy.
This is one of the reasons why I think I am not a Hufflepuff, because I often think about loyalty as it regards myself, and I feel like I am not that loyal.
What?
Ultimately.
This is my current romantic partner, by the way. What's going on here?
I'm loyal to my roommate Hufflepuff boyfriend, though. But what I think about is, you know, I'm like, what if I were great friends with somebody for years, and then they called me up and they said, I just killed somebody. I think, okay, I'm loyal to you, so I'm going to jump into protecting you. I'm going to, you know, give a false alibi for you. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if I would do that. I don't know if my morals would come through and I'd say, I don't know, murder is bad.
My first question would be, what happened? Because if it was defense, for example, then there is definitely the loyalty and protection instinct coming through that you want to help the person. Because if they were in danger,
you risk the possibility that that person who you're loyal to or wanting to be loyal to could lie to you. You know, you don't really know what happened if this person. So that's an interesting where you appear on the scale of Hufflepuff as opposed to Meg. It's like, well, if you'd want to know the circumstance, there's a follow-up question at all period to, I just killed somebody, will you help me out? Then that's more puffy than strictly what, you know, somebody else would be like, okay, that was wrong.
Yeah. We're here to kind of, like, for the feelings and the empathy than, like, the rationale, where I feel like Meg is like, and now I step away from that because that is a bad thing, and I rationally know that that is a bad thing, where Hufflepuff's like, but I wonder what happened. How did you feel during that? Did you feel okay?
We want to live through your feelings. Tell us.
I think maybe I have too much loyalty to go around.
I feel like you have too much loyalty to facts. Like, I feel like it's just like, you're like, this is the fact, maybe?
Well, I'm not a very factual person.
Not necessarily like facts, but yeah. like fact of the matter.
Well, and also, yeah. you know, I might end up feeling loyal towards the murder victim.
Mm-hmm. You do have a lot of empathy, though.
I do have a little too much empathy, sometimes at a detriment to myself.
Yes,
but I would be, you know, like, I understand that you're in trouble because you killed someone, but I kind of feel bad for the person you killed. Who's right here? I don't know. I can't say for sure.
Yeah.
It'd be tricky for me, I think.
Yeah. You evaluate it more logically than someone who's a Hufflepuff might just be like, well, emotionally, I am already committed to this person, so no matter what they do, I'm going to stick with them. And maybe not, like, fully introducing that, like, breaking down of, like, well, why did it happen? This is actually a bad thing. And just kind of being like, I love this person very much.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's this concept of, like, the ride or die friend, too, which I think Gryffindor and Slytherin both have aspects of that, too, where 100%. No matter what, because it's obviously, or often they're pitted against each other, too, so they're like, no, we're with the Gryffindors, we're with our crew, we're with Slytherins, we're with their crew. And Hufflepuff, to that extent, is I think, very similar.
Yeah.
Is Ravenclaw the least ride or die-y of all of the houses?
I think so, because circumstances change. And it doesn't make you less compassionate. It, I think it's maybe a part of the Ravenclaw trait of being open-minded, of thinking of how people can change and you yourself can change. And that's going to affect relationships that you have throughout your entire life.
I think Ravenclaw kind of would prioritize individualism the most out of all four houses. Like, just being an independent thinker. Just because all the other houses, like Eric said, like, we kind of have our crews. We're all behind each other in everything, especially the Gryffindors and the Slytherins, for sure. They're just, like, more or less, like, the fierce out in your face. Like, we are right. This is my crew. I will fight you over this. Whereas Hufflepuffs are more or less, like, if you come at us and try to hurt someone in our crew, we will create a cradle around them and then have spikes coming out of that cradle. But we're not going to come after you initially.
We're going to start.
Meh.
Yeah. But we're coming after
you.
We're going to start.
Meh.
But you'll finish it.
Yeah, we will finish it. It's not going to be pretty.
That is a good point, though, that, you know, you look at Slytherin and there's Malfoy and Crabbe and Goyle and all of them. They're a bunch of mean people. Mm-hmm. There's the Gryffindors. And like I mentioned before, there's the Hufflepuffs, Ernie and Hannah, who are so, you know, we are Hufflepuff and we are going to stick together.
Yep.
But you can't really look at Ravenclaw and see any examples of that. Mm. Like, the main Ravenclaw character we see is Luna, who is actually closer friends with some Gryffindors than anyone in Ravenclaw.
Ravenclaws are really independent.
Yeah.
Even when you look at somebody like Gilderoy Lockhart, who is Ravenclaw, he did everything he did by himself, for himself. Quirrell, same Quirrell way, too. But all very individual. Like, Quirrell got involved with another person in Voldemort because he was trying to better his own sort of glory. So they're just very independent beings, more so than other houses.
I feel like Ravenclaws, you like, value relationships, but it's not, like, your number one thing. It's not, you're like, I am an individual person, and if I can have a relationship with people, it's also a nice added bonus with this. But, like, I need to establish myself as an individual first, whereas I feel like the other houses work a little bit less like that, a little bit more like, I like being part of a group, where you guys are like, I like being, like, my own, like, special individual standout person by myself first, and then in a group second.
Well, Mel and Juliana, have you seen the new movie out with Idris Elba and Tilda Swinton called 3,000 Years of Longing?
Oh, no, not yet. No.
Oh, it's really good. So she all I'll say about that is she's an academic that is actually sort of isolated. She had love once, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It didn't work out. It wasn't her fault. But she, this pursuit of knowledge has isolated her into, and she's happy with it. She's like totally 100% thrilled because the pursuit of knowledge is the relationship that she seeks most in the world. So it's like going through... and then she meets a genie who tells her all about all the people that he's loved. But at the same time, it's really just about that, what fulfills you. And the pursuit of knowledge is, I guess, in a way, antisocial, like inherently antisocial, because it's self-betterment through from within and from external sources that are not necessarily people.
Yeah, I feel like Ravenclaws, you guys look for the least external validation out of all the houses.
Right, there would be like a parent-teacher, a student-teacher relationship. There would be a mentor. There would be a lot of that going on with Ravenclaw.
But less like outward, like pats on the back.
Or not like pack creatures.
Yeah.
Independent, individual. Not to say, you know, uncaring, because example, Luna, she's
extremely
empathetic and friendly.
Toward Nargles.
Toward Nargles. See, and that's another thing. I love animals. I will be there standing up for the little guys that can't defend themselves. I will be putting bees in a cup to take them outside. I will be letting spiders have their own little corner.
She absolutely does. You should see that corner over there. Yeah. It's
If I could, I'd give them like little housewarming gifts to hang out with us.
We do name all the spiders.
We do name our bugs. Yeah, it is a good point. Just thinking about how do you better yourself as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of Ravenclaws, it's not so much like my friends define me. Mm-hmm. It's more what I do defines me and my relationships can define me, but they're not the number one source. Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of where you find your spark, too. Because I know, like, when I be social with people and also, like, make them feel good at the same time, that's where I'm, like, really just, like, I get that Dumbledore twinkle in my eye. Mm-hmm. I'm just like...
Oh, I know the one.
Yeah. And I feel like for you, Meg, and for, like, most of the other Ravenclaws, it's like that... You get that knowledge base. You're, like, on a roll with, like, finding out, like, doing research or, like, getting some kind of information. And you're, like, you have that twinkle in your eye. You're like, yes, I have this information. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you're pursuing on your own. Whereas, like, for me, like, I need that, like, human-to-human interaction to, like, get that little twinkle in my eye.
It was kind of, like, detached a little bit. Well, Meg, I'd love for you to talk about what you've told me about at times. I think it'll be interesting for the show. People saying, I love you over social media and how that affects you kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is something I've noticed, you know, ever since, like, I don't know, 2007. Seeing people comment things like, you look great in this picture, Illy. Or even if they spell out, like, I love you so much. And
Juliana's feeling very, she's slowly shrinking into the floor right now. Actually,
I will say, every time I say it, it's very genuine because, as we all know, Juliana doesn't know how to lie. I'm very bad at lying. Well,
and I probably say it a lot over things, too.
Yeah, and I do believe that when people say it, it's mainly genuine. For me, the hang-up, though, was I would see these things and I'd think to myself, do you know this person enough to love them? Mm-hmm. Like
taking it very literal almost?
I get very literal and I think of love as a very strong and serious emotion. And then it makes me think, well, who do I love? Thinking like, I don't know, maybe six people. Mm-hmm. I don't really have that outpouring of affection towards others in such a way that I would, in a way, be so vulnerable as to say, I love you, in a reply to a tweet.
Yeah, it seems kind of flippant when you see other people doing it. Kind of in a way, versus the more social creatures in, I think, Juliana and me that are like, love you, bestie, you know, kind of thing. It just comes very natural with no, I'm not being discerning when I say it. I'm being genuine, but I'm also not being like, I need to limit the number of people I tell I love them because my love has a limit and it makes me vulnerable. Like, I don't have that thought process.
Yeah. I think with me, it's like, if I feel like I have this little pot of love inside my soul is unlimited and I can just give it out by saying it more and more. And, like, expressing it more and more, like, I got more and more out of it. For you, Meg, it might be just like, you're like, I have this much. I shall divvy it out to people, and it shall be lovely, and it shall be nice.
We're learning here that Ravenclaws are just emotionally unavailable.
Oh, no.
No.
We're probably extra.
If anything, we're learning that Juliana is insane.
Yeah, well, that I've already known. Please, again, see the one-year anniversary of Thank You for Spilling.
Insanity.
She was unleashed. I think, Mel, you usually keep her under wraps a little bit, keep her a little contained, but I did not contain any Juliana.
It's the editing that makes her sound a bit more sane.
Oh, I see.
All the insanity goes to the bloopers.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are more extroverted Ravenclaws, but I also think that they would similarly be a little bit more careful about who they professed love for in a social media type world.
Yeah,
a little more discerning.
Like, Ravenclaws are those people who, like, when they say, I love you, you really, like, hold that in your soul as, like, a really, like, key moment in your life for a long time because, like, you know for a fact that they haven't said it to a lot of people and you're like, oh my God, Meg just said I love you to me. And, like, think about it and be like, oh God, Meg said she loved me.
It's kind of like when a cat shows that it loves you.
Yeah.
You know, because like...
really touched that this foreign species has decided to make its home with you. I mean, I thank our cat for loving us all the time.
She loves us so much. But you look at dogs, and dogs are so open and giving with their love to everybody.
So you are a cat and Juliana is a dog.
The more I learn about my dog, the more me and Myrtle become the same person and the same being.
Yeah, you guys are the same person.
But how it relates to sort of Hufflepuff and this dark side of loyalty is, again, I think the pack mentality too, of and just the idea that you would give of yourself without it being necessarily earned, or there's, you know, no conditions, is dangerous when you are either dealing with a bad faith actor or somebody that has done something wrong, because it's this idea that morality is subjective, I think, and that's dangerous to contemplate. But I mean, in the real world, there's so many gray areas, and there's so many, what Mel said, but why did you, you know, kill this person, or what really happened? I need to know more. I'm the same way. I would want to know, and I would certainly be asking those follow-up questions, because everything is kind of a gray area, and so it invites, I guess, an opportunity for a Hufflepuff to do something wrong, like Cedric Diggory killed all those people in the Cursed Child play.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the fairness that comes through from our personalities.
Well,
also.
Fairness, right, in order to be fair.
Because you want to, if you would be in that situation and you killed someone, you would... others to give you the same chance that you explain yourself and why did this happen, and you're just thrown out of the friendship, relationship, whatever you have there with that person, and that's it. That fairness to ask what has even happened, I think, should be something given to everyone first, and then you make your judgment. Otherwise, you can't judge the situation fairly.
That's a great point. I mean, we do see sort of the Hufflepuffs in year two, to Meg's point, like prejudging Harry before they have all the info. And that's because nobody has the info. Students are dying or getting petrified. You know, they're getting taken out by this Slytherin's monster, and Malfoy and his people aren't making it any better.
Yeah.
So like, there's definitely that. Yeah, you would want the justice system to sweep in and be like, okay, innocent until proven guilty. And you would rely on that for all of your friends.
I think that would be healthy loyalty.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that is how I would come about it. You know, if a good friend told me that they'd killed somebody, I wouldn't immediately say, you're not my friend anymore. I would say, I want to learn more about this situation, what caused it.
Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't necessarily break the law yourself in order to help that person from the get-go?
I would break the law because... it depends on the law, because laws...
this is being recorded
laws are not the same as morals.
Laws are not
Lots of things have been legal that have been terrible.
Yeah.
Valid point.
So I think I would want to rely on my moral compass and say, okay, why did this happen? How did this happen? Who did it happen to? You know, I want to think about them, the victim. And I think all that is very good, fair loyalty. I think the dark loyalty would be saying... say no more, I'm with you. I'm going to help you bury the body.
Well, it's that famous line about a good friend will bail you out of jail. A best friend will be there right next to you going, that was amazing.
Let's do it again.
That's flawed. That's sort of a toxic, it's funny because it's funny, but it's very toxic. Because I think we all need those people that are going to talk us out of our worst urges, which is why I have Meg.
That's so cute.
We talk each other out of our worst urges.
I was thinking, you know, in thinking about fairness, though, as a concept, and then loyalty, I go back to sort of the founders of Hogwarts, and I think about, was Helga Hufflepuff, in anything that we know about her, which is precious little, very loyal, and I think she was a rare kind of loyalty to all witches and wizards when she said, we'll take the rest and treat them just the same. So that was like the first act of loyalty, but it was a very generic, it wasn't to like her best friend that she had known for years, it was literally just, no,
to anyone,
it's right to do the right thing here, which in this case I think was right for her to say, of everyone who has the gift of magic deserves to be able to learn how to use it.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the first act of loyalty. And it was really nice. And that's not dark at all.
I might be misremembering because I'm just associating Helga Hufflepuff and her cooking skills with elves. Did we learn something about Helga Hufflepuff being a real ally of house elves?
I know she wrote some of the recipes for the house elves for the kitchen.
Those recipes still exist for the kitchen to this day, yes.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. So Hufflepuff did that?
Yeah.
Some of them, at least.
Because I wouldn't want to be confusing Hepzibah Smith, and who's a prominent Hufflepuff, who had Hufflepuff's cup and all of those things, who had her own house elf as well. Dottie or...
Hokey. But she wasn't entirely kind to Hokey, you know.
Well, there's that very real, I guess, mental break where she wasn't taking care of herself in a way.
Yeah.
And so it kind of allowed her to do a lot. Like, there was definitely abuse all around.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I wouldn't want to be confusing Hepzibah with Helga, which I do all the time because it's like this
similar person. The same name.
But yeah, I mean, if Hufflepuff herself was an ally of elves, that speaks to her loyalty for all creatures too. That again, that fairness that keeps coming through.
I always go back to the Dr. Seuss thing, a who is a who no matter how small. You treat a person like a person, even if they don't exactly match what you think of as being a person or match who you are. You treat them as a human being and as how you would want to be treated. And I think that's a good trait that Hufflepuffs have, was that empathy. And also, it's a weakness that we have, too, because sometimes we get too empathetic about things and really start just, like, feeling everything through our feelings.
That might be a big overlap between Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw. I might have some Hufflepuff in me. I want to learn things and be friendly and be nice and do what's right and good. But I think of, you know, Hufflepuffs having that everyone is valid because that's just...
Yeah.
Kind of aligns with Ravenclaws being a very open-minded group of people. And I think being able to kind of put ourselves in others' shoes and seeing things from their point of view. I think that is a pretty strong overlap between those two houses.
And I think Ravenclaws would have learned that skill of putting themselves in other people's shoes as a debate tactic or as like a, to pursue, you know, to really fully understand something, you do try and want to see it from multiple angles.
Yeah.
So that could lead to them having empathy. The most interesting thing about Ravenclaws, real quick, as I'm thinking about it, is that they seem to all make fun of Luna. You know, Luna might just be a little bit extra ridiculous, you know, than the average curious kind of strange, like... Luna was an outcast even from the Luna-type Ravenclaws in her house, it would seem. Again, we don't really see it that often.
Yeah, from the outside view.
But so I'm really wondering, I guess there was a question there somewhere, now I've lost it, about the Ravenclaw aspect of seeing other sides. But I guess every school setting really just has, you know, that outcast, the less popular people, the people are a little weird.
Well, it goes back to earlier, the idea of Gryffindors have, you know, a pack mentality, Slytherins do. Hufflepuffs do. Ravenclaws, they'll look at Luna, who's in their house, and say, that means nothing to us. We still think you're a little weird.
Maybe it's like a, just a, not like an active, like, distaste, but more of just like a, you don't really fit into any of my categories, so I don't need you, putting you to the side kind of thing.
That's so interesting to see the exclusion of Luna by the other Ravenclaws as not a thing that's the Ravenclaws being pack against Luna, just all being like just individual and not taking her in.
Yeah.
So not excluding her, but not actively being warm to her because they're not pack creatures.
And that also makes me bristle because I've always looked at myself as more of a Luna type of a Ravenclaw.
That's true.
I was not getting...
She
has glasses and everything.
I'm weird.
Resuscitates wasps and gives them honey.
I'm a big fan of... I want to save animals. I just love being creative. I'm an artist.
You should see her radish collection.
My radish collection. I do have a... I don't have radish earrings, but I have earrings that are toast with butter on them.
That's adorable.
I should be wearing those. Sweet. But like, and I never, you know, I never was a straight A student. I was not the person who knew everything. I was never the know-it-all. I'm a very curious person and a very creative person. And I think that's really what makes me a Ravenclaw, that in individuality. I think if not for the character of Luna, I might have at this point in my life said, oh, actually, I'm definitely not a Ravenclaw. You know, I thought I was when I was 12, but I can tell now I'm wrong. But because Luna exists, it's easier to look at that and say, you know, actually, yeah, the Sorting Hat got it right. I am a Ravenclaw. Mm-hmm. I'm a Luna Lovegood Ravenclaw, and I'm happy with it.
Yay.
That is so nice. I love that.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you, everyone.
I always say everyone should be a bit more like Luna in their life, so...
Oh, I agree.
I think you totally nailed it then.
Yeah. Okay. I think that pretty much like wraps up our kind of disjointed, but I think honestly kind of nice discussion that we had. I thought that was good.
I think there were some great points in there. You all had some good points. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I thought that was fun. So now we're going to go into our game for the episode, and that is going to be our classic game, Are You Puffin' Kidding Me? And this is where each person tells one fact, quote-unquote, about them to the group, and the group must vote if the person is telling the truth or puffing with them. Each guessing person can also ask one question of the person giving the statement, and as we normally do, we would like to give the floor over to the guests if you would like to go first.
Oh no. Okay, I played flute in school band.
How many years did you play flute for?
Just three. I started in fourth grade and mm-hmm. played till seventh grade, and I quit a week before the Disney trip.
I think this is true, because I also played flute for like a year, and I gave it up. I was like, I can't do this, I can't
practice. After a while, it gets pretty intense.
My question is, when did you start playing saxophone?
You know too much. That was another instrument that my parents thought I should get into at the same time.
And I was just thinking, when coming up with a lie, I would immediately go to thinking, oh, I could say that I played the flute. Because that is, for some reason, popping into my mind right away. And I think we had someone already pretending that. And I am just thinking, maybe that's the same thing here, and you might be lying about that.
I see.
You never know.
Are we ready to guess if I'm puffing, kidding you?
Oh, I think Eric is puffing, telling the truth. I think he's telling the truth.
So, Juliana says true. It's true. Meg, what do you say?
I think he's puffing because there's a saxophone under our bed, but there's not a flute under our bed.
I would also say that he is lying.
Yeah, I kind of screwed that up a little bit by and Meg knew too much. I never played flute, but everything I said about quitting after 3 years and a week before the Disney trip was because of saxophone. I played alto sax.
Oh, and alto sax.
I would still play alto sax, except I think my pad's dried up and I need to repair my saxophone. You know, now I know more sort of sax songs and I would like to play some solos. I could play Tequila.
Oh, okay.
That's good fun.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really play anymore. I blow, but nothing happens. Okay, somebody else.
Okay.
I'm going to say one of the biggest concerts I've ever been to, that I voluntarily went to, was a Kanye West show.
Okay.
When did this happen?
2013.
Do you remember what the encore songs were?
No.
How did you end up going to that concert? What made you decide to go?
It was through my college, we had something called Program Board that would try to get students discount prices to go, you know, see Broadway shows, other things around New York. One time it was a Kanye West concert at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
I do know that she did go to college in New York.
I will say my college also had similar things, but in Boston instead of.
And you know what? I think there's a Kanye West ticket underneath our bed right now. This might be true. I genuinely don't know, actually.
I think this is true, because I know that my college had this, and it was so random as to what the programming was that they had the free discounted tickets for. Yeah, I think I remember Kanye West being one of those things, because New York, if something comes to New York, it usually comes to Boston. So I want to say, like, he came through, like, Gillette Stadium or something, too, and I want to say that this is true.
It is indeed true.
Aha!
And one might find it unsuspecting of me, because my typical concerts are, you know, Brandi Carlile, the Indigo Girls.
She hates men.
Jewel, Tori Amos.
Isn't it nice that she's dating a man?
I know, it's real lucky, actually. Good for me.
He's an exception.
Yeah.
He's an exception to
No, the it's true, but I mean, you, see, I couldn't have decided whether or not it was true, because you have seen over 200 concerts, and you've listed them all. Hello, Ravenclaw.
Yeah, very Ravenclaw of me. I have a list of every show I've been to, and it includes the venue and the opener, and if I can find it, the set list.
Aww.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever heard you talking about Kanye. As somebody who grew up in the same hometown as Taylor Swift, I would hope you would never see Kanye.
Well, I am not a fan of Kanye West.
Yeah.
And so the reason I said I went voluntarily is not because I wanted to see Kanye West in concert, but because my best friend in college was an enormous rap fan, and she found out, Meg, we can go see Kanye West box seats at the Barclays Center for $20.
Oh, I totally would have gone.
And I said, okay, I'm going.
I would have gone. Yeah, our tickets, I don't think ours were that cheap and that good either.
Eric, did you say that it's true or false?
I didn't. I would have probably said false just because I know that Meg's long list of concerts, she could literally make something up that's in the middle there, and I would never know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I shall go next. So,
okay.
Speaking of concerts, I have been on a lot of concerts too, myself. I like going to bands that I love to see and just go nuts. Anyway.
Rock on.
I went to a concert and I was in the first row, and it was one of my favorite bands. And sometimes this band would take someone on stage to sing along with them. So I was actually pulled up on stage, was given the microphone, and I completely blanked. And that was so embarrassing that I couldn't remember the text of the song. And I was immediately jumping down again and disappearing very far in the crowd back so that no one could look at me anymore.
What band was this?
It was a Finnish band called Disco Ensemble.
Do you pretty much know all of the lyrics to their songs?
Yes, I do.
I want to say that Mel is probably she might be telling the truth, because she told a kind of similar story like this once before, and it was false, where she was like performing or pulled up on a stage.
My follow-up question is, how did the band treat you at that time? Like, when that was clearly occurring, did they try and like, were they good about kind of taking care of you when it became clear that you didn't really know what they were singing?
Yeah, they were very sweet. The singer was like trying to like sing along with me together, so it wouldn't be, you know, he tried to make me remember, but I was just, I have such a stage fright, I could not be in front of people and do that. So it all happened so quickly when he pulled me up there. But they were very nice. So, and he just continued singing the song by himself, so there was not much of a delay or anything.
If this did happen, that is what I would want to have happened for you. Is he being nice about it? So at this point, I'm going to say I think it probably happened.
I'm going to say it's true, because although it seems like, you know, you had stage fright, what could have pulled you up there but being confident that you knew all their lyrics? I think that's what could have gotten you up there. As someone who also has stage fright, you know, I think I wouldn't get up on stage unless I knew all the words, and then maybe that would, you know, give me some confidence. Yeah. So I think it's true.
It's not true.
It's probably your friend. Your friend, that happened to your friend, Mel?
It happened to my friend.
Yeah, this is what always happens. I was like, it didn't happen to me, but it happened to my friend.
So in a sense, it is true, just not to
me.
Just not to me.
I was right next to her, though, and I would have definitely had that reaction. I would have totally blanked, because if you're pulled up in that moment and you're just like, oh my god, you're in shock, like, what is happening? And then you're supposed to sing in front of all of these people. No, I could not. Okay, then we have Juliana left.
Okay, so when I was in fifth grade, we got to do a talent show. And so my talent, of course, was singing. And I sang What Dreams Are Made Of from the Lizzie McGuire movie with a dance.
With a dance. Wow.
I did a dance. I made up a dance to go with it. It was not a choreographed dance by anyone who actually knows how to do choreography, but I did do a quote-unquote dance.
What was another entry at this talent show?
I'm trying to remember who else was there. There was a kid who did like really terrible magic tricks. There was definitely someone who was doing like weird gymnastics. I remember there were two girls. One of them's name was Hannah, and she was telling jokes with some other girl. I think my friend Jenny also sang too. Not with me, but she sang. And then I know my friend Kara sang. And I think someone else like did face paint on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My question is, what did you wear?
I honestly think I was wearing a turtleneck that I really liked.
What do you guys think? I feel like this is very much Juliana. She just is like that. She still does that. I mean, if you look at her social media...
Sing songs from the Lizzie McGuire movie?
Yeah.
Hey, I do that too.
And you still have that turtleneck.
Yeah, it's very small now.
She keeps posting videos of herself dancing the Firebutt Crab Dance and that kind of stuff, so...
I do know how to do the Firebutt Crab Dance. I did not know that dance in fifth grade, we'll admit to that. Can confirm it was not the Firebutt Crab Dance in fifth grade.
It did not exist at the time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say this is true.
Me too.
Because we are the same age, which means that you were in fifth grade between the years of 2003 and 2004. And the Lizzie McGuire movie came out the summer of 2003. So it would have been hot. It would have
popped
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Okay. Eric, what do you say?
I'll say it's true. I've been burned before.
Unfortunately, that's all true. I did all of that. And I was pretty sure I was wearing a turtleneck. Pretty sure I was wearing the turtleneck from what I remember, and it had like stripes. It had like a brown stripe here and then like two red stripes, and the rest was white, which was not a good choice for me because I'm a messy eater, and I remember getting this pasta sauce on that thing more than once.
Please tell us that was taped in any way and we can still see this footage.
I don't think it was. Like, we have, that's the only year we ever did a talent show.
Yeah. Well, Julia, what was the reaction to your performance?
I think I got a round of applause, honestly. Yay, I want to say that I did.
Yay.
I had the karaoke CD because I had it at home, so I brought that in as my ensemble.
Wait, there was a Lizzie McGuire movie karaoke CD for sound songs from the soundtrack from the movie?
Oh, yeah. The whole movie had its own soundtrack. You could sing, the tide is high, but
oh, so that's a real song. So was the song you sung also a real song?
It was written for the movie.
It was written for the movie.
Yeah.
But it was still on this CD.
Yeah. It was, that contains like real songs too, which is funny because one of the songs, and I think it's like You Better Work. Work it, girl. Cover girl.
Oh, give yeah. There's a cover of Supermodel by RuPaul.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was a RuPaul song until like a week ago. And I was like, oh my God.
We're having a moment over here.
Yeah.
Meg
and I are just like vibing out over Lizzie McGuire.
Okay, you guys. So the points that have been won here for the guests by Eric and Meg were, Eric has gotten 1 point, Meg has collected 2 points, which is great. So collectively 3 points for the guests this week.
Yeah, the guests Yay. Are still definitely winning.
Juliana made 1 point, and I made seriously 3 points. I don't know how.
It was very good. It was because, you know, I like to believe the best in people, and I'm not going to make that mistake again.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And with the newly collected points, the guests are continuously in the lead with 10 points. Juliana has 6 points, and I have caught up to 7 points. You guys did great, so thank you for that. That was fun. I feel like I learned so much about you guys again.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so what we'll do next is we'll hand it over to Buttercup for her question of the week.
Hello, friends. In your opinion, how does every house show their loyalty, and what does the dark side of loyalty look like to you? If you would like to answer this question, please send us an email at puffcastpod@gmail.com or contact us on our social media sites.
Thank you to Eric and Meg for joining us this week.
Yes. Oh,
thank you for having us.
Yeah.
This was great fun.
It was such a surprise to see you and get to know you for the first time, Meg.
Yeah,
and Eric, that you came back is always a pleasure. So
I'm thrilled to be back, honestly.
Yeah.
I love your guys and I love your guys' love for each other.
I didn't scare him away. I'm physically in the same space as him, too. And he's still not running away.
I'm only slightly intimidated.
Pizza Wizard is here, too.
Hey, I'm here. I just wanted to say goodbye before we finish up this episode because I'm going to go enjoy a slice of my friend. Is that cannibalism? Ooh, that's up to you.
Yeah, I would say it is, but okay. you guys, where can everyone else find you if they want to look out for you?
You should pimp your art.
Yeah.
I'm an artist. My art website is meg-scott-art.com. You can also find me on Instagram at Megus, which is M-E-G-G-U-S-S, where I post pictures of art and cool bugs that I see and all that sort of stuff.
A lot of cool bugs.
Yeah, she's very good at like drawing in watercolor and all those things. And
I did a drawing of Myrtle.
I know, it's on my wall still.
I did a drawing of Myrtle wearing a Hufflepuff scarf.
That picture
yes.
I took of her with her like looking at me with your picture in it is still my computer background.
Oh, I love that.
I love it.
I love that. I'm so happy to hear that.
Okay. And Eric, where can we find you?
Yeah, anyone can find me over on Twitter where I spend most of my time. It's Spielerman, S-P-I-E-L-E-R-M-A-N. And thank you for Spieling is my personal podcast that will have more episodes soon. But in the meantime, I host a weekly Harry Potter podcast called MuggleCast.
No one has ever heard of
it. I've never heard of that. What is
it? We're really struggling after 582 episodes to get the word out. To get the word out.
And
we do exist. We are here. We are a show that
trying
is going
so hard.
We're going through the first Harry Potter book now again. We've revitalized our chapter by chapter segment. And, you know, revisiting these books for the first time in 15 years since we originally started that segment, we've grown so much. Literally every other page, we spot a new security nightmare for Hogwarts that should not exist.
Classic.
Because Dumbledore is just putting these children at risk. So we've definitely grown up in the world of Harry, but we still make it fun and it's still very enjoyable.
Yeah, I'd say the best thing is like seeing, kind of identifying with where you guys are coming from, like as an adult, and seeing like what the other listeners are now, because they've also grown up with you, like those 15 years, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And they're like our age. When we first read them, we're kids, and now they're adults, and just seeing like, oh, that's irresponsible.
Well, and having these adult perspectives is fun, and still trying to remember how you very much at mm-hmm. one point didn't have those adult perspectives. Like, yeah. No, as a kid, we're like, oh yeah, Draco sucks. He should die. But then as an adult, you're like, better crisis management and guidance counseling, and there really need to be
a few more therapists.
Well, yeah. Right. Like, we just talked about Neville getting carted away by Madame Hooch to the hospital wing. She literally just leaves her entire class with brooms 5 minutes from when they first... like, we're introduced to brooms. Something bad is going to happen.
Yeah, with a child that's clearly also a troublemaker. Like, Draco has made it known already in that scene that he is a troublemaker. And she's like, oh, goodbye, friends.
Yeah.
I'll see you later.
Yeah, so definitely, definitely an adult perspective. But it's a lot of fun to do that with our friends.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And listeners, if you would like to get in contact with us here over at Puffcast, you can listen to us on all platforms where podcasts are found. You can find us over on Instagram and Twitter at PuffcastPod. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/Puffcast. You can shoot us over an email with all the love that you want to send over to Meg and Eric, and we will forward it to them at PuffcastPod@gmail.com. And you can also support us on Patreon for as little as $2 a month and help contribute to our monthly donation, which, thank you to David, has now like quadrupled in size, which is really awesome.
Oh my God, yeah.
He's now donating 25% of his wand sales on Etsy for every month. So we've been adding like over $100 extra to our donation every month.
That's incredible.
Thank you, David, if you're listening. We love you a lot and thank you for that.
What is David's handle? For his
he wands? Is at crooked_wands. So David makes some really, really intricately well-designed wands.
And the best jokes, and he's just overall the loveliest being.
He's working with me on the Patreon exclusive 25 days of Christmas advent calendar of dumb jokes. The Dumb Joke Advent Calendar, which will be revived this year over on Patreon.
I need this.
Coming soon.
Yeah, so if you want access to...
get one.
If you want access to last year's ago's Dumb Joke Advent Calendar, along with the upcoming Dumb Joke Advent Calendar, where you get one dumb joke every day leading up to Christmas in December, you can head over on to patreon.com/podcasts. And then if you'd like to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we would love to read it here, and I will send you a sticker plus whatever the heck else is in my sock drawer when I happen to walk over to the stickers. You never know. It's a mystery. I'll send anything out.
I have a dumb joke. Can I what the
Oh, I would love a dumb joke.
Whistle? Okay.
Yeah, Meg knows this,
so don't participate.
Okay.
Okay. What do you call a 10-eyed fish?
What?
Big.
That's a good one.
Yeah. What do you call a fish with no eyes? And that takes me back to junior in high school. I learned that joke a long time ago.
My favorite dumb joke is, what is brown and sticky?
A stick.
A stick?
I love it. I love all the dumb jokes.
Oh, those are all great.
So until next time, stay poppy and badger on! Yay!